Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Smartcast. You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I am your host, Vivek Bhattacharya. Folks, the excitement just doesn't stop. If last week saw us worrying about the aftermath of the supercyclone Amphan in Bengal and locust attacks in western India, much of this week was spent worrying about cyclone Nisarga hitting Mumbai. Ultimately, the city dodged that bullet. But such climate shocks are the new normal. If there's one thing we've learned from the two cyclones, it is that cities in India must build climate resilience to be better prepared. Now, resilience is important, but what about mitigation? After all, climate change won't stop unless we stop producing greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide. We do that through our high-energy, fossil fuel-guzzling economies. Now that the world is slowly opening up and economies are restarting after the brutal shock of the COVID-19 pandemic, here is something countries need to think about. Do we go back to our coal and petroleum-intensive past, or do we accelerate to a green, carbon-neutral future? Last week, the European Commission proposed a 750 billion euro fund that it hopes will kickstart the European Union's economy while attaining its goal of zero carbon by 2050. England is under pressure to roll out a similar plan. China's economic aims haven't seen much of a shift, but it hasn't set itself economic targets either, which means that there's some pressure off China's emissions for this year. The US, under its climate change denying president, is going in the opposite direction, stripping away regulations and environmental protections. This will result in a much higher carbon footprint. In India, our environment ministry has come under a lot of criticism for a slew of decisions taken hastily during the pandemic, like proposing a new coal mine in the Dehing Patkai Elephant Reserve in Assam or a uranium mine in Telangana's Amrabad Tiger Reserve. On the other hand, a recent report suggests that India should stop wasteful subsidies to coal and petroleum and channel more funds towards renewable energy. So as India opens up its economy, what should be the way ahead? To answer that question, I have as my guest today Professor Navroz K. Dubash from the Center for Policy Research in New Delhi. Navroz has been working as a scholar, policy advisor, and activist in the area of climate change for over 25 years. He was a lead author on the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC's, Fifth Assessment Report in 2014. He is also a coordinating lead author of the IPCC's Sixth Assessment Report, which is out in 2022. Last year, he edited an important book of essays on India and climate change. It's called India in a Warming World: Integrating Climate Change and Development. Hi, Navroz. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Vivek. I'm very happy to be with you.
So, Navroz, let's get straight to it. Now, with the pandemic regulations kind of easing slowly, there is an urgent need for economic recovery. What I wanted to ask you is that, is there a way that India can look at a green recovery? And also to give you context to that, you have yourself said before that India is in a unique place where it cannot afford to grow first and mitigate later. So has the pandemic thrown that into sharper relief?
I think this is really the question on everybody's mind.
Right.
And I think that actually the way we need to approach this is undoubtedly we have to put livelihoods on the front burner. We have to be trying to get people back to work, get them back to their livelihoods.
Right.
But I think we have to look for opportunities to do so in a way that allow us to reboot the economy in a sustainable direction. And in some cases, that may not be possible, but in many cases, I think it will be possible.
Right.
And that's because the way in which we structured our economy before COVID was hardly perfect. There were several sectors
Right.
where we could already have done better. So one example is the electricity sector. So the electricity sector has really been in quite a sad state, not just for a year or two, but for a decade or two.
Right.
And we are now in a situation that electricity demand has fallen. Distribution companies therefore don't have money to pay generators.
Right.
The generating companies. The generating companies have outstanding loans. And so there's sort of a financial gridlock in a sense in the sector. And what the government has done is say, look, we will bail out the distribution companies. We'll give them money and say, you please pay, clear your debts with the generators.
Right.
Now, in a sense, that's a little bit of a lost opportunity. Because what we could have done, for example, is say, all right, take the same money and use it to more rapidly shut down old and polluting plants.
Right.
So you get the old and polluting plants, off the grid. What that does is that gives the new, less polluting plants and renewable energy a larger market share, makes them more competitive. And a lot of the costs that the distribution companies have to pay these old generators just to keep them going, those disappear. So you actually end up with a cleaner power system, cleaner air, healthier finances, and a power sector that is more able to be resilient for the future. So we need to look for those kinds of opportunities.
As a corollary to that, India has fairly ambitious goals in terms of, say, green and renewable energy by 2030. So do you think that these projects might see a push, or maybe should we be more ambitious in that regard?
You know, these targets are useful because they indicate a direction, but at the end of the day, the people investing the money have to see the opportunity for reasonable returns. And I think that they're all waiting to see, you know, A, if demand picks up,
right.
B, if the government structures the sector in such a way that allows them to continue to make money. And that's where the example I just gave
right.
would be a useful example,
right?
That would be a signal to the investors that, yeah, these guys are serious about allowing new generators to be competitive rather than being crowded out by these old polluting generators that have been around for a long time. I think if there's a bit of a problem with the government's approach to how we've approached the crisis, it's focused too much on what the medium and long term is
right.
and not looking at how do we enable action in the short run. Another example of that is, you know, the money that is now, we've now found that MNREGA, the Rural Employment Guarantee Act, is the best way effectively to get money to vulnerable households fast and efficiently.
Right.
We could be thinking about how that money helps support rural India become more resilient in terms of future climate impacts.
Right.
And the climate impacts, you know, they're not at the front of our mind now, but they haven't gone away. We just had a massive cyclone in West Bengal.
Right.
It's also, there's some literature suggesting that the locust swarm that we've been worried about the last few days has probably been in part accelerated or provoked or made bigger by some of the uneven warming patterns in Africa.
Correct.
So these things have not gone away. So if we're spending money, we should try and spend it on things that make rural and vulnerable populations more able to handle shocks.
Now, see, one of the fears that a lot of observers have when it comes to rebooting the economy, at least in the medium term, if not in the short term, is that this might mean that a lot of, say, environmental safeguards might be loosened, that fossil fuel might get like a boost in the short term. Where would be the balance, you would imagine?
Well, I'm not sure that I actually see this as a question of balance. I actually haven't seen very credible arguments that the reason why Indian business is not getting back to work and is not able to ramp up as fast as is needed has anything to do with environmental protection at the moment. It has to do with the availability of labor.
Right.
It has to do with stable and sensible regulations on how they manage COVID. You know, so threats of arresting managers if they open factories and then they have COVID positive employees and the management has to take responsibility. Those are the kinds of things that are scaring industry.
Right.
I don't think it's, I mean, at the end of the day, the environmental safeguards issue has to do with longer term investment.
Mm.
Anybody who's applying to invest now is unlikely to be hiring workers for a year, 2 years, 3 years. That's not our short term issue, right? It's really not.
Right.
It's a distraction.
Right.
And I think we have to also remember that, you know, COVID kills, yes, and it causes a lot of destruction and a lot of stress on our healthcare system. But the kinds, but if you drop environmental safeguards,
right,
the resultant environmental harms also kill. I mean, let's not forget,
right,
that India, the Lancet says India has 1.2 million premature deaths from air pollution a year.
Right.
They may not be as visible as COVID. They may not, they may be crowded off the front page of the papers, but it's not like by dropping environmental safeguards, you're also not, I mean, you risk also further contributing.
Right.
To precarious health and precarious livelihoods, right? So I think this trade-off idea is it's a little problematic, honestly. I think we need to move past that.
So, Navroz, finally, I wanted to ask you personally, what kind of work are you doing right now around climate change and policy?
Well, no, thanks for asking that. One of the things that's taking a lot of my time is actually contributing to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is this report done every 5 years that tries to lay the basis for policymaking for governments around the world. But more salient to India, actually, I'm looking at the question we just discussed, which is how can India and other governments organize themselves better for the much more complex governance challenges that climate change throws up? Right. So if you're looking at climate change and you have a situation where you might have locusts, a heat wave, COVID, a cyclone all coinciding, how do you build systems that actually manage to defend the population against these impacts? Or if you're looking at big system changes, so we're talking about renewable energy in India increasingly, right? Now, for that renewable energy to penetrate, we also need to be thinking about our transport system shifting and becoming more electric and battery operated. For that to work, we might be thinking about our buildings and integrating battery storage into our buildings and using the face of buildings to charge batteries.
Right.
So now you suddenly have, you know, when you have an urban ministry, a renewable energy ministry, a power ministry, a transport, you know, so all of these are now segregated, but they have to all work together. How do we build a government that will allow us to do that? How do we build institutions and coordination that allow us to do that?
Right.
It's a little bit of a wonky question, but I think that increasingly to address climate change, we're going to be able to, we need to find a way of understanding all the linkages between decisions that are made in different contexts.
So thanks a lot, Navroz, for being on the show and sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you so much, Vivek. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for inviting me.
That was Professor Navroz K. Dubash, suggesting ways in which India can kickstart a green economic recovery after the lockdown. And this is something that the government needs to seriously think about, because if you think the pandemic and its effects have been awful, climate change will be much, much worse. That's it from me today. Join me next week as I speak to a special guest and also bring you up to speed with news of the climate crisis. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. Follow HT Smartcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle HT Smartcast. We'd love to hear from you, so write to us at podcasts@hindustantimes.com, listen to more podcasts on htsmartcast.com, and subscribe to this one on any of your favorite platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week, and remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.